Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto. Happy New Year. Lot to cover this month. First of all, thanks for downloading, streaming, however you get this podcast. I appreciate you finding us. This is a monthly podcast about cave exploration. If you're curious about cave exploration, you need to know some basic safety. Go on a few trips with some experienced guides before you try to lead a trip yourself. And if you're serious about getting into caving, join your local grotto. To find a grotto or chapter of the National Speleological Society, go to caves.org. Well, you may have heard about the excitement in Indiana this past month when 7 members of the Indiana Cave Survey were stranded in Binkley Cave, Indiana's longest cave, due to unanticipated high water. They all made it out just fine, but spent 36 hours underground, most of that just waiting for the water to go down. And a big rescue effort where cavers from across the region, mostly Hoosiers, rallied and participated. And that's the great thing about cave rescue volunteers, right? They've trained for this. They're ready. You hope they don't need it, but when it comes to helping their caver friends, and we're all friends as far as a lot of us are concerned, when it comes to helping their friends, they're going to show up. You can count on it. My good friend Joe Kinder was one of the first ones down there. Of course, Anmar Mirza from the National Cave Rescue Commission was down there coordinating everything like the freaking superhero he is. Anmar posted his entire report to Facebook, and I look forward to reading from the cavers themselves. I understand a lot of them are working on a report about the experience. This was a survey trip in Binkley, which is the 7th longest cave in the U.S., and where some of the hottest caving in the nation is happening almost every weekend. I'm just so proud that all of my friends who were underground did the right thing by waiting out the high water and all the ones that drove down to Corydon to help out. I didn't get much sleep that night, which you'll hear a little bit about in the interview. I'd really like to get some of those cavers on here to talk about their experience. So if you were down there and you feel like doing the podcast, just let me know, all right? Email me at alpineproductions@gmail.com. alpineproductions@gmail.com. And if you don't talk to me, I'm going to be talking to you before too long. So I took my first trip to Tumbling Rocks in Alabama at the beginning of December. Quick down and back trip to Tag, and we made it a formal wear trip. The guys wore suits, the ladies wore dresses, and we made it back to the Christmas tree formation, where Nathan, the cave patron, had it all decorated with ornaments and battery-powered lights. I'd never been in that cave before. I had a blast. Dean Wiseman made hot chocolate and cider. There were cookies, donuts, candles. It was just a classy caver's Christmas trip for the ages. A lot of fun. I was really happy to be a part of it. I was able to record some really cool audio in Topless Dome. Check this out. Something really magical about that room. And I got this from that showerhead formation, not the king's shower, but that formation along the main passage, big active flowstone underneath this constant dripping. Even though it was pretty dry there, this thing was going pretty good. Check this out. Listen. I'm sorry if I made you have to pee. It's kind of sounds like that, but man, what a great cave. Can't wait to go back. So, are you a serious caver who's got fancy survey gear you want to keep working, like a nice Suunto compass or clinometer? Maybe you've had to replace one already. That's got to suck, spending all that money just to have to spend it again. Well, Swego's got something that'll keep your Suunto KB14 compass or PM5 clinometer or the tandem protected from the elements. Swego's SightLight Shields. It's a thick, transparent layer of Lexan polycarbonate that adheres to the face of your Suunto and protects it from the bumps and bangs that can cause scratches, cracks, and fluid leaks. And Swego's SightLight Shields also come with Swego's innovative glow-in-the-dark sight lights pre-attached so you can read the sight without having to shine a light through the face. If you've got one of these instruments, get one of these. Protect your $100 or $200 investment for just $18 with SightLight Shields from Swego, proud sponsor of the Caving Podcast. Visit swegogear.com and order yours. That's Swego, Swaygo, gear.com. And last I heard, Scott's still testing out new materials to start making Swego packs again. Stay tuned. So in December, my grotto, the CIG, held elections for the executive board. Our chairman, Joe Kinder, stepped down after serving the standard 2 years and nominated me as a candidate for chairman. And you know how these things go. So I am now the chairman of the Central Indiana Grotto. What? Excuse me? Well, okay, I got a kid on the way, so I'm about to be pretty short on time, but that's okay. I only work 25 hours a week, so maybe it won't be too bad. All kidding aside, I am pretty honored to be at the helm of a grotto that's been around over 60 years and that puts on the annual Indiana Cave Capers, and I promise to do my best not to screw it up. So that happened. Thanks again, Joe Kinder, for the vote of confidence. Speaking of which, mark your calendar for August 4th through the 6th, 2017, for Indiana Cave Capers. We don't know where it's going to be yet, but we know it's that's the weekend. So make plans to come caving in Indiana that weekend. We got some world-class caves you definitely want to check out. And it'll really help me out if attendance is good this year. Indiana Cave Capers, August 4th through the 6th, 2017. See you then. Speaking of the little caver on the way, I'm doing my best to get in as much caving as I can before Memorial Day when the baby's due. Indiana caver Kevin Romanak heard the episode with Chris Parks when I asked him if he'd ever done the Sullivan Rise trip and that I'd wanted to do it for a while, and he emailed me asking if I wanted to go and do the trip. The rise of the Sullivan River in Sullivan Cave here in Indiana. Sullivan is a really cool cave. The southern portion is like a spaghetti bowl. That's where most of the 10-mile length is. But the northern portion is just one long river passage that goes all the way up to the sump or the rise. And so that's the plan. Later this month, we're going to do that one. It's about a 12-hour trip, and I'll probably hate myself when it's over, but I'm really looking forward to it. Also, taking some beginners through Buckner this coming weekend, my sister included. She wants to see what this caving thing her brother's into is all about, so hopefully that goes okay. Speaking of beginners, that's who I'm talking to this month. Okay, as you'll hear, they're not really total beginners, but they are really young guys. They're still in high school, but they've caught the bug big time. And so I wanted to do what I could to get their perspective as new serious cavers who have taken the time to join the grotto, go to meetings, and go on trips. I think they offer some great perspective and some hope for the future, you know, the next generation of cavers. So here's my talk with Aaron Cook and Hunter Crouch. So you guys, are you both still in high school?
Yeah, we're seniors.
Mm-hmm. I'm a senior at Carmel High School.
And I'm at Fisher's.
And you both just started like serious caving, a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
But you've been caving kind of off and on since you were like in your early teens, right?
Yeah, about when I was 12 and about fifth grade, I went on my first trip to Binkley's with my uncle. So I was part of the grotto trip, so that was sort of my intro to, like, real wild caving.
Binkley was your first trip?
Yeah, it was.
Well, how long was that trip? I mean, were you just in there for a little bit and checking out areas that were already known and stuff like that?
Yeah, we just kind of went in there. We were in there for about 6 hours. We just kind of walked through the river, kind of went into some of the other areas up there.
Do you remember which entrance at Binkley?
It was on a farm, I know that.
Okay. What about your first trip, Hunter?
My first trip was in middle school with Boy Scouts. We went to Blue Springs and we stayed overnight in their bunk beds. So it was more of a commercial cave, but it was a good start for...
It was an intro.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do those trips at Blue Spring pretty much only for Boy Scouts where they'll let you camp in the cave and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, they had like bunk beds set up in there.
And you got to see like the commercial part of the cave and then a little bit more?
Yeah, we got to go into a little more wild side. There's a walkway down to like the boat tour area, and we just sort of went underneath the railing, and there was a little hole, and we just went for it.
I remember when I went on that trip, I was wearing like shorts and a t-shirt. So really introduction, so not much wild.
And that's all you needed was shorts and a t-shirt? You didn't need it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, did you have a helmet and stuff too?
Yeah, we went at least helmet that. And lights and stuff.
No knee pads though required?
No, nothing crazy.
Well, so is that how you think you got the bug? Like you just thought, hey, that's too cool. I want to do that again.
Yeah, for me it was. We got into it and I heard Aaron talking about his trip before and that he had another one coming up with his uncle. And that sort of threw me into it.
What about you? How did you catch the bug, Aaron?
I think when I really caught it was my second trip. It was a trip to Sullivan's Cave. And it was just going to be a casual, like, walk through the backbreaker, kind of go back, explore a little bit, then walk back out. And about halfway through the trip, they ended up deciding to make it a through trip. So we actually went through that little hole, walk through the river out the other entrance. So I thought that was really cool. That was my second trip.
And that's a pretty substantial trip. I've actually never been on that trip where you go out the, what is it, the where you drop down and you do kind of the caver's baptism. You must have done it in the summertime or something like that, right?
When I dropped into that water, I remember it was like over my head, so I had to swim.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like this little 13-year-old swimming through cave water.
What about you, Hunter? One of your favorite trips, like a particularly memorable trip?
One of my favorite trips would be with the Garrotto. I think it was the first big trip I went on with them without Aaron's uncle. Can't remember the name of the cave. Aaron, do you remember the one where we had to wear our wetsuits?
Was that Upper Twin?
I know there were two bathtubs we had to go through. I don't remember the name of the cave off the top of my head.
But it was with the, was it with the CIG?
It was.
Was that Sullivan's? It was to the Colossus room, so it might have been Sullivan.
Oh, that was Sullivan.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Colossus is in Sullivan. Wow. That's a big trip.
Mm-hmm.
Were there a couple guys who had to turn around and go back?
I believe so.
Yeah, there was one guy who had a big like school backpack and stuff was just falling out of it.
I think I know the trip you're talking about. I think I remember somebody talking about that one. Wow, that's big. That's a big trip. When I go caving with real young guys, and I'm not, I'm 33, but I can feel it pretty easy when I've overexerted myself. Have there been times when you've just been way out ahead of everybody?
I know on the Wayne's trip we went to a few months ago, he was just dead. But like I'm a distance runner and I train a lot with physically stuff, so I wasn't really that exhausted. Like I was going out that crawlway and I just went nonstop in like 15 minutes.
Well, let me talk then to Hunter about Wayne. If you were dead in Wayne, what was that like? I mean, where did you go and were you dead on the way out? Was that the problem?
Wayne's was something. We went to all the formation rooms and we made it back to like the roots.
Yeah.
Way far back. And on the way back, me and Charlie were sort of falling back, and we went up in a fork instead of going down, and we ended up going on a big two-hour loop without the rest of the group.
Yeah, they got lost in the breakdown. We were waiting in front of the canyon passage for them for like, I don't know, 45 minutes. We're like, all right, we better go back there and see if they're all right.
Oh, my gosh. So to explain, if you're listening and you don't know about Wayne in Indiana, first of all, if you do know about Wayne and you want to read more about it, the Indiana Karst Conservancy just put out a really extensive history written by Tom Solman. Compiled, I guess, by Tom Solman. And it's just a great read on the history of the exploration of Wayne Cave. And Wayne is one of the longer caves in Indiana. It's about 4.25 miles. And it's infamous because of its quarter mile crawl, a lot of which you're pretty much on your belly the whole time. And that's like the only way in or out to the good parts of the cave. So you went to the RPI passage, the formation passage.
Yeah, we went all the way back there, turned around and went to the
wells. Room.
But you got turned around in a loop, just you and Charlie?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
Just up and down through breakdown. So that sort of drained me. And then we had the big long crawlway, which had me cashed.
You're just thinking the whole time, God, I got to do that crawlway again.
Yep.
And how many other people were on that trip?
About 7 people, I think. It wasn't a huge trip.
So it was 5 people grouped together and you and Charlie getting lost.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. So it was just you two on your way out. Did everybody beat you out?
In the crawlway, someone else fell back with us. And so it was 3 of us on the way out. But Aaron was out probably a good hour before I got out.
I just sprinted through it. I was the first one out. I was ready to get out of that cave.
I've heard about that. You just were like, how long do you think you took going out in that crawlway, going out of the cave?
15, 20 minutes.
On the
way in, it took about 40 minutes just because they like to stop and take breaks, but I just didn't want to take any breaks.
And there are a couple places in that crawlway where it's kind of cool. The stalactite squeeze or the former stalactite squeeze, they've since dug it out.
There's a few formations and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, but after a while, it really kind of loses its novelty.
Yeah,
especially after you're
on
tired
the way out, especially.
Hunter, what did you think when you left Wayne that day, when you finally reached the entrance? What were you kind of thinking?
I was thinking to myself, I've seen about as much as I need to in that cave.
He got out of that cave. He's like, all right, Aaron, I think I'm done with caving for a while.
Just for a little bit.
That's the first thing I thought, too, when I did Wayne. But I did Wayne
Wayne was my third cave ever. My first one was Sullivan, and then I did Donahue Dog Hill, and then I got all excited, and I'd heard about Wayne, and I'm like, quarter mile belly crawl, bah, no big deal. And then I did it, and I was miserable, and I was like, I'm never going back again, but I've been back twice. Do you think you'll go back?
Now that a little bit of time's passed, I probably will. The stalactites and formations were just unbelievable.
Yeah, that's not something you forget. That RPI passage is just one of the most, especially in that area, the Garrison Chapel Valley, just southwest of Bloomington, Indiana. There are so many caves down there, but so few of them have the level of formations that I think that area does. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible.
Yeah, I remember going through there and I'm like, this is the most beautiful cave I've ever seen. Then the following weekend I went through Buddha Cave and it changed everything. Like that Buddha is just a gorgeous cave.
Isn't it?
Yeah, the walls are just white and they blend to other colors and stuff.
It's just, that's a great cave. And I recommend Buddha to anybody who wants to come to Indiana to go caving and they don't mind a little bit of water and they want it to be a short trip because it's not a real long cave. It's like 3,200 feet mapped, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I, Aaron, when we went there, we did a little bit of, I want to brag a little bit. I feel like we did a little bit of pushing when we went there.
Sure.
We went and did a couple extra bathtubs. I'm pretty sure all this is still on the map, but I felt like a badass. I don't know about you.
I remember at one point, Charlie was just completely underwater trying to push that one.
Oh, yeah. He's fearless. He doesn't care. Are there any caves that are like on your list that you definitely want to do as soon as you can?
I heard you mention Donahue. I've heard a lot of people talk about that. It sounds like a pretty cool cave.
You've not been to Donahue?
I haven't been to that one yet.
What about you? Have you been to Donahue?
I have not.
Oh, man. Donahue is a classic and easy to get to. There's three entrances. There's the Dog Hill entrance. There's two caves, Donahue and Dog Hill, and they're connected by a little squeeze, which has kind of been widened out, called Berg Squeeze. There's two Donahue entrances. One is a natural entrance back over the hill, and the other one is a culvert. You go to the culvert, and you walk through the culvert, and then you're in the cave, and then you're there. And it's got so many levels. It's a great little cave. It's not little either. I shouldn't say that. It's like 3-4 miles, something like that. But it's the through trip from the culvert entrance to either the other Donahue entrance or the culvert entrance out Dog Hill is just great. The Dog Hill side is gorgeous. Giant rooms with giant flowstone everywhere. It's really something. But the problem with that cave, and this is an environmental concern, there's a lot of people that live kind of over top of it, and leech lines kind of get into the cave, and so there's like sewage in the cave sometimes, especially the Dog Hill side. It's real bad. But yeah, despite all that, you should check it out.
Sewage in a cave. Yeah, I'll go check it out.
just don't go in with any open wounds or anything. Have you both done Buckner?
Buckner, yes. Yeah. We went there a few trips with the scouts.
Cleaning off graffiti.
Oh, yeah. So you did like service trips in Buckner.
Yep.
That's great.
Couple, actually. We went probably 2 or 3 years in a row, just going in, scrubbing spray paint.
That's great.
Yeah, it's an ugly cave, but it's just nice to go underground every once in a while.
You know, it is an ugly cave, but it's a fun cave because it's got just a little bit of everything.
Yeah,
you can do anything in there. A lot of crawling. I mean, you got the crawlway, but at least it's a dry crawlway and it's wide. You can roll through it.
Yeah.
But you got where have you been in Buckner? Have you been to the waterfall passage?
I don't think we've seen that.
That's the lowest part of the cave, and it's a really, really cool, kind of tight. But it's cool if you can make it all the way to the waterfall and then get to the low point. It's really, really awesome. Have you been through Keene's Grotto?
I haven't heard of that one.
That's it's in Buckner. It's an area in Buckner, but it's like kind of the alternative to the crawlways to the Air Force Room. But it's real, real tight and kind of sporty, as the veterans say. So you should check that out. So you've just done the circle route in Buckner and scraped off some graffiti?
Yeah, we went in on a mission cleaning off spray paint, and we didn't have too much time to
explore.
Look around.
Yeah.
Do you remember where you were scraping spray paint?
I remember.
It's a big room.
Yeah. The Air Force Room rang a bell when you were bringing that up, but I don't remember too much graffiti in there.
There's definitely a lot of graffiti in the Air Force Room, a lot of stuff on the ceiling. What about other caves in that area? There's so many caves near Buckner.
I know I've been to Coon and Eversole. That's a trip I've been on a few times.
Yeah.
Went there for Cave Capers 1 year. I actually led a trip through there, I believe, through Eversole. It's just kind of straight back through the river.
So which of the two, Coon and Eversole, do you like more?
Eversole. It's bigger. Coon is just kind of, you're in there for like, I don't know what, an hour.
Yeah, it's, you're just crawling around.
It's like a circle.
So Eversol is kind of like, it's just a creek cave, and you, it's just a hike underground. You don't even need your helmet. You should bring your helmet, but you don't need it. Mm-hmm. And Coon is kind of just a crawl cave. You're just kind of crawling around. It's not very big. So you mentioned Cave Capers. What else did you do at Cave Capers? This was a couple years ago, you said?
Yeah, this was with my uncle. I believe I did another cave. Don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's just kind of a muddy crawl I did with my uncle.
What about you, Hunter? Have you been to a Cave Capers before?
I have not, but I was able to go to Coon and Eversol on a different occasion, and we hit both of them in the same day because they're right next to each other.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. I remember Eversol, as soon as we came out, it was like December, so I'm like, oh, great, here we go.
Yeah, I hate that coming out of a cave when it's cold. You just got icicles hanging on.
Well, especially that one. You're waiting in the creek the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm cold inside the cave, especially on that Buddha trip. Even though I was wearing a wetsuit, I was shivering the whole time.
Yeah, there's not a lot of fat on you, so there's a little bit more on me. Let's see. Is there anything about caving that you don't particularly like? Like, you know, a lot of people that don't like, you know, wet, muddy, grim crawls.
Would be nice if caves didn't have as much mud in them, but I think that's just kind of the experience.
Yeah.
It made cleaning a lot easier.
Well, and it kind of makes you earn it too, right?
I mean, it's not for everyone.
Yeah, you gotta get through this before you can see this. Kind of like the whole Wayne thing. You gotta go through the crawlway to get to the RPI passage.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Hunter?
Clean up?
Yeah.
I left a pair of boots out a little too long after a trip, and it was growing weird stuff on
He sent me a picture. There's just mushrooms growing in his boots.
Oh, no. I've had that happen, too. I ruined a helmet that way. I went to a trip in Buckner, and I just kind of, and I, it was a time when I was caving really intermittently, like once every 3 or 4 months or something like that. And I just had, everything in a, you know, garbage bag and left it in there, and the helmet, you know, like all the straps and stuff on the helmet kind of deteriorated because it started growing mold and stuff.
Those are expensive too.
Yeah, exactly. I totally screwed up. So the cleanup then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in those winter months when you can't just get the hose and hose everything down.
Mm-hmm. That was my biggest downfall. Just not being able to go outside and hose it all off. Sort of boxed it up in the garage. Was like, I'll deal with that later, and just kept putting it off. Well, and it started to freeze.
Oh, no.
Just hunks of mud. Frozen.
So what is your cleanup process then?
In the summer, just take a hose to it. But this last trip, it was in November, and it was just getting too cold to get the hose out and stuff. So I threw it all in the bathtub. Mom wasn't proud of that.
Throw it in the bathtub. What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, basically, I just use the sink in my laundry room, trying to scrub everything down. Or just throw it in the washer and hope for the best.
and then mom really gets mad.
Yeah.
I got to be honest. And this is probably terrible of me, but I usually just take it to the laundromat and just throw it all
in
there.
What are they going to do?
What are they going to do? The guy at the laundromat down the road from my house is a super nice guy, and we talk, and mostly I'm just talking to him to distract him from the terror that I'm unleashing on his. But I use the real big, like, industrial ones, and I throw, you know, just a few articles of clothing in, like, a 5-load washer, you know, so there's plenty of water in there kind of sloshing everything around, And I don't know. I've never been banned from a laundromat before, but that's my process.
Not yet.
I probably shouldn't do that though. Hosing it down I've done before, and then I would just wash it at home. What about caving gear? Is there a favorite piece of gear that you like?
I got a nice Petzl helmet that I didn't really appreciate too much until my last trip, when all the experienced guys were like, "Where did you find one of those?" Because apparently this type of helmet or the make of it is hard to come by now.
Oh yeah, the Petzl, I can't remember the name of it, but it's they quit making them. It was like a couple years ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I managed to find one of them online, and it was cheap, so I picked it up, and it turned out to be a lot cooler than advertised.
What about you?
For my helmet, I just use a basic Petzl helmet. For my light, I've got the Duo, which my dad managed to scoop up for free because he worked at a Petzl project somewhere in Washington for his job, so he got that for free. but it's not the brightest light. Like, I've been on trips with some guys that have miniature suns on their helmets.
I know. I'm
kind of envious of that, yeah.
I get light envy all the time. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I went caving down in Alabama. I went to Tumbling Rocks, and the cave patron down there, he was in there with us, and he built his own light. He's like a NASA guy, and he built his own light, and it's awesome. It was so bright. And he went into the topless dome in there, and he just lit up the whole room. It was amazing. Like a 400-foot dome, and he just lit up the whole thing. Yeah, light envy is a very real thing.
Yeah, I definitely need to invest in a new light. I always ask all the people I'm with, like, what kind of light do you use? What do you recommend?
Yeah.
I need something cost-effective but also bright.
So is that on your list, a new light?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's on mine too. What about you? If there's one piece of caving gear that you would replace, what do you think it would be?
Probably my backpack. I managed to destroy that on the last one
as well.
Who doesn't?
I also need new, like, clothes to go caving in, because I know some of the more experienced cavers, they use those, like, spaceman jumpsuit things.
Yeah.
I don't know where to get those. I just wear jeans.
Those can get expensive,
yeah.
But they're really awesome. They're warm, though, which mm-hmm. would probably be all right for you if you get cold a lot. Yeah. So what do you wear?
I just wear basic, like, long sleeve shirt, jeans, wool socks, hiking boots.
Do you ever run into trouble with the jeans since it's all cotton?
It does get a little tight and wet at some points, but it's worked pretty well for me.
What about you, Hunter?
Pretty much the same thing, just a quick dry shirt, because most of the caves I go to tend to be wet.
Yeah, and cotton does not work.
Very muddy.
Yeah, cotton's no fun. I wear dress pants. Like, I go to Goodwill and find dress pants because they're polyester.
Huh.
And they're usually kind of thick, or they're either polyester or wool, which either one's fine. And the material is usually thick enough to where it'll stick around for a while. And I don't know. I just found that works really well for me.
Wow.
So let's get back into caves. What do you think, since you guys are so young and kind of, and not really just getting started, but I mean, you got a lot ahead of you. Where do you think your caving career, where would you like it to plateau? Like, how serious are you? Do you want to get into surveying? Do you want to find a career path that might take you into caves? Or what do you think?
I know on one of our previous trips, someone was talking about the cave rescue training and the cave surveying. I think that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
It's just a whole nother world down there when you're underground. Like, time doesn't have any meaning. And there's just so much that we haven't explored. It's kind of like the ocean. So there's a lot we can do with surveying, and I'm especially good with finding new passages and crawling through little holes, and I think it'd be good at surveying that, so that'd be really cool.
Well, it's great that you want to be that serious about it. What about you, Hunter?
When we were in Sullivan's a year or so ago, we made it back to where there's just water coming out of the ground, and the guide of the trip was telling us how there's about a 7-foot or so passage back there, and no one knows what's back there because it's always flooded. And he was talking about bringing in, like, scuba gear and stuff and having people go in through there. And I had scuba experience in my past. I've got my license when I was in middle school on vacation and stuff, and so I thought it'd be really fun to combine the two things and dive in the caves. So I started asking at dive shops what it would take for me to get to that level, and they're sort of laughed at me. It's like, it'll take a long time to get into that stuff.
But cave diving, I mean, that's mm-hmm. serious stuff. Mm-hmm. But you'd try it if you ever got enough training?
Yes. If I have enough dives and enough caving experience, I'd love to get into that and see something that no one's ever seen before in getting into the underwater surveying and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds crazy. So right up my alley.
Well, you think you'd be willing to do that too, Aaron?
Yeah, if there's a promise of seeing something that no one else has seen before, that'd be amazing.
So that's kind of the drive then for you.
Yeah, just mm-hmm. exploring new places.
What about careers? Since you guys are still in high school, what do you hope to accomplish with your life?
Right now I'm finishing up my pilot's license.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. So I'm looking into becoming a commercial pilot out of college.
Nice. You going to go to Purdue or something?
I've got into Indiana State. Still looking into Purdue.
They got a decent program at ISU.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually exploring options. I've asked around at some of the CIG meetings about some careers in caving. I know biology, some of the creatures in that cave are kind of unresearched. Also, geology is something that interests me. I think it'd be really cool to study all the different formations and rock things in the cave.
You talked to Jerry Lewis?
I don't believe so.
He's the president of the IKC. You should talk to him.
All right.
He's pretty much made a career out of caving. He consults a lot. He was featured on Dirty Jobs, like as a cave biologist, as being a dirty job. And he's a wealth of knowledge and a great dude. You should talk to Jerry.
All right.
You can check to see what that wetsuit cave was, to be sure. I'm pretty sure it was Sullivan's.
Oh, the Colossus?
It was Sullivan.
Yeah, that was definitely Sullivan. Mm-hmm.
That was so much fun going through when the water level and the height of the ceiling was only separated by a couple of inches. And you're going through with our wetsuits on. And if you move too fast, the water level would rise up above our mouth.
You should have come to Buddha, because in Buddha, there are like, how many bathtubs do you think
there's like,
there?
I mean, the route that you and I did when we went the other way, when we did the drop down, when we went the other way, there were like two or three more that way.
Yeah.
But there were like four the other way. So there's, you know, there was half a dozen or more bathtubs in that cave.
At some points we had to take our helmets off, and I was ear dipping in the water.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to get like cave amoebas growing in my ears.
Did you have to take your helmet off on the one you're talking about?
At some point, not because I had to, but just because I saw a crack and was like, I'm going to just go for it.
Are there any trips that you've done that you just hated? Like, after you got out, you're just like, oh, God, I'm either never going to go back there again, or, you know, I was just in the wrong mood to go caving today.
The last half of Wayne's.
I looked at him. He was just dead. Like, he was, like, falling over. His eyes were closed.
That cave will do that to you.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If you spend enough time in it. I did a Wayne trip one time where I got about 100 or 200 feet into the crawlway. And I just yelled at the guys in front of me. I said, guys, I'm turning around. At that point, like two other people had bailed because they didn't like how tight the crawlway was. They'd never been there before. And so they were getting claustrophobic. And I wasn't getting claustrophobic, but I did not eat anything for breakfast that morning and did not get much sleep the night before. And that's not the kind of cave you want to do on low sleep and no fuel.
I think that was the boat I was in.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you'd been in there how long?
We were in there for about 10 hours.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
We went in, and then when we got out, it was dark out. So, like, we didn't see the sun the whole day. That's kind of fun to do.
Yeah, that happens a lot in the wintertime.
Our first little intro back into caving this year was to this little cave called Truitt's Cave. We went with Paul. He was taking a venture scout crew. So we went with them, and that was just kind of a tiny little cave. The guide had never been in there before. We were in there maybe, I don't know, 4 hours. There wasn't a whole lot to see, a lot of graffiti in there. Just kind of an ugly little cave.
I've heard about Truitt's. Yeah. I've never been in there myself. Were you okay with it? It was just kind of another cave trip?
I mean,
nothing
it's good to get underground. It's always good to get underground, but it wasn't an interesting cave. There might have been like two formations in there total. And we actually ended up like losing some people in there. So we got out of the cave. He locked the cave gate. We got out with the group like, all right, we're going to take a group photo. And they look, they're like, wait, where are these people?
Yeah, we were three short for the look, mom, we made it photo.
Okay.
And the cave was already locked up. And me, Aaron, and Paul sort of just look at each other and we're like, all right. And we didn't even say anything, just ran back up.
Non-verbally went to the cave, called in.
How long is that cave? Like, were you in there looking for a while?
No, we found them within like 15 minutes. Yeah, we walk in and maybe five or six little, hello, and nothing. Kept walking, and then we could hear them, and they didn't even realize they were lost until just about the time they could hear our voice calling for them, because they thought they were just right behind us, and then they hit a dead end.
Oh, man.
And about 2 minutes went by, they said, of just like, wait, hold on, what's going on, before they started to hear us again. So panic never really sat in with them.
It was probably still just scary enough to know that for them to know that they should probably try to keep up next time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Especially if you're not experienced in a cave, that'd be kind of scary to get lost in there or away from the group.
Yeah. Would you say, even though you've kind of only been at it a couple of years, would you say so far that there is a favorite cave on your list, like a cave at the top of your list that you always like going back to?
My favorite cave would be Buddha, just for all the formations. I thought it was a really neat cave.
Favorite cave so far is Buddha.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Second would be Wayne's, because it's got the adventure and the sightseeing, the decorations.
What about you, Hunter?
Even with my bad experience towards the end, I really liked Wayne's with the crawl going in, not so much on the way out, but the crawl on the way in when I had all my energy and I was still psyched to go see the rest of the cave. I was loving all the crawls and the torpedo squeeze, going through that, just having a great time. And the formations, since I haven't been to too many decorated caves, sort of caught me off guard. And I really enjoyed that sort of stuff.
Either of you, do you have any fears, like any latent claustrophobia or anything like that, or fear of heights or anything? Is there anything about caving that kind of spooks you a little bit?
Now, I know when you're underground, you see all these huge rocks, the breakdown that's fallen from the ceiling. So, you know, at any moment that could fall on you. Like the ceiling could literally collapse on you and you could die. But I don't know. I've never been afraid of that. I've never been afraid of the tight squeezes or heights or anything. I find it thrilling.
The only time I've been super nervous in a cave was, can't remember which one I was in, but just the situation of being up above a canyon and there's a slant that we had to sort of shimmy across that was just at an angle enough where it was manageable to get across. But if you did it too fast, you'd slowly start to...
I think that was Wayne's, mm-hmm. the canyon passage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, okay.
Right at the end of the crawlway.
I know the spot you're talking about. Yeah, where we get to the end of the crawlway and you got to kind of stay close to the wall, but you can't because it's sloped like that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And the first time we went through it wasn't too bad because I just thought, oh, that's probably not that deep. And then we got to the end of it and one of the guys with the brighter lights shined it up for us and it just went down. It's like, oh, that's going to be a lot more fun going back knowing what's down there.
Have you done any vertical before, Hunter?
I have not done any vertical. I know Aaron has.
Yeah, that Buddha trip was my first little vertical experience, which I don't know if you really want to count that because it was just a 30-foot drop.
Yeah, I mean, you had to put on the gear. You had to, you know, you had to get down there.
Yeah, the ascending part is the hardest part for sure.
Yeah.
It's tiring.
Would you like to? Are you into the idea of doing vertical?
Mm-hmm. I did some vertical type stuff at Scouts, doing like the climbing merit badge and stuff, and I even got my own little figure eight and stuff when I thought I might want to get into this. And then the more I learned about it from cavers, they're like, yeah, don't use figure eights on my rope. I could mess it up.
Yeah, there are some people who don't like aluminum gear on their ropes, and you know, it'll kind of dirty it up and stuff like that. But there are a lot of other people who are a little more laid back about that. Figure eights aren't bad. I like using them because they're light, but I don't like using them because they're hard to control.
Did you hear about that rescue that happened at Binkley's? I think it was yesterday.
It kept me awake that night.
Really?
Yeah. When I heard about it, when the news started coming out at like 11 at night, I was just going to bed and I was like, I'm not going to sleep much tonight. And I finally did fall asleep maybe an hour and a half after that. I wish I would have stayed awake a little longer because I think it was at 1 o'clock in the morning that the report came back that everybody was okay. Not everybody was out, but everybody was all right. Mm-hmm. And so I woke up again at like 4:30 to a text from one of the guys that I had texted, two of which were on the rescue itself. Like they had gone down there. I don't think they went in, but they had gone down there as part of like the on-site support. And they finally texted me back saying everybody was all right and that kind of thing. That made national news.
Really?
Yeah, a couple national news outlets reported on that. And then, of course, afterward, when they found out everybody was all right, it got a little bit more attention. So
I heard there were over like 50 people in that rescue party. Like, that's a little excessive.
Well, I mean, you never know what you're going to need. If it's a rescue, you might have people who are injured and then you need a lot of help, but it's good that here in Indiana, we've got so many cavers on that rescue list that just were willing to make the drive down there on a Sunday night and help out and at least get a fire going to warm people up when they came out and things like that. I mean, it was just a really impressive effort on the part of everybody. Do you think you'd want to be on the cave rescue list someday?
Some point. I feel like that'd be fun because me and Aaron, we're both lifeguards at the same place. So we like to do the first aid stuff. We got into it when we were little, going up through Scouts together and now lifeguarding. So always there to lend a helping hand.
You've already gotten your rescue training started then with the lifeguarding.
For sure.
That's great.
I think that'd be a really rewarding experience to get someone out of a cave if they need help.
Are you guys Eagle Scouts?
We are both.
Yeah, we're both Eagle Scouts.
What was your Eagle Scout project?
I made a butterfly garden at an elementary school in Carmel.
Oh, cool.
For me, when I was about 13 years old is when I did my project. I made a trail at my old school. It was like a cross-country trail, and I built a fence. So,
like a woods trail or something?
Yeah, it was a little woods trail. We had to clear out the woods, spray the weeds, put down gravel and stuff.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Trail building is no joke.
Yeah, it's hard work.
It is. It's super hard work.
I actually got injured in that process. I got hit in the head by a 2x4. I had to go to the doctors and get checked out for concussion.
Oh, my God.
So I literally shed blood, sweat, and tears for that project.
I've heard of people doing cave cleanup for their Eagle Scout project. You know, that's like super admirable. I mean, it's you get to go caving. And, I mean, you guys, you've cleaned off graffiti and stuff in a cave. It's hard work.
Yeah.
What does caving do for you that you can't get from any other activity?
I really like going in and just with the mindset of there could be something in here, like a little passage that's been overlooked before, and you go back through there and it's something that no one else has been to or people haven't been to in 40 years, and just seeing something that most people don't have the opportunity or the resources to go and see.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's an escape from reality. I call it the anti-bullshit zone. Like, you're down there, there's no sounds from the upside or the top world. There's no, like, car noises, which you can't escape up here anymore. It's just you lose track of time, and the people you're down there with are usually not bad people. You usually like them, so.
No cell reception?
Yeah, that too, the cell phones. I usually just leave mine up in my car.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. See, that's the thing is, like, we're all so connected now. And so it's like a cave is really one of the only places, unless you drive somewhere that doesn't have service, which there's so few of them left anymore.
Yeah.
It's the only place where you can completely, completely disconnect.
Yeah, especially when you just turn off your lights. Everyone's quiet. There's no lights. You're just sitting there in the dark. It's nice.
And your eyes are playing tricks on you.
Yeah. That's my favorite part.
Have you introduced anyone you know to caving?
I introduced him. Yeah. I know I have a lot of friends that when I tell them about it, they're like, oh, this sounds really cool. I'd like to get into it. So in the future, I'd like to take a lot of people to some trips, probably when it gets warmer out. I feel like now that I'm starting to get more experience and more trust with the caving community, I can get into some of those caves, the easier beginner caves, and introduce people into it, get more people into the activity.
Have you introduced anybody, Hunter?
Whenever I go caving, I'll normally bring my GoPro if I know there's going to be bathtubs or something like that. So I'll post a picture or a video up on Instagram, and people are always liking that and wondering if they can go sometime. But I've never actually been able to take anyone with me yet.
When you do, Aaron, what's a cave that you're familiar enough with to where you would feel comfortable leading a trip with people who have never done it before?
Now, I know I've led a couple of older guys through Eversol because that's just straight back. But another cave I really like is Salt's Cave. I've been there probably 2 or 3 times. I've explored that pretty well. I actually found some new little passages. So I feel like I could lead back there. Probably Sullivan's. That's a pretty straightforward cave, just through the Brackbreaker. Maybe explore some of the other passages. But I think if I just take a map, I could lead a trip pretty well. I can figure out. I'm smart.
What's your favorite thing to see in a cave, Hunter?
Big formations kind of catch me off guard when you're not really expecting them and you just sort of come upon them. Sort of takes you back because you know it takes years for something like that to form so big. Just seeing stuff like that where there's no other place you can see something like that.
He would like Buddha, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't like Buddha? It's a beautiful cave.
Full of formations. Incredible.
I know in Wayne's we stumbled across some of those formation rooms. You come out of this crawlway and you're like, whoa, just a big open space, just full of formation, just packed full of them.
Well, and I mean, domes are pretty cool too because they take a long time to
carve
out.
Yeah, those huge rooms. It's like it's almost being like outside while you're underground because it's so big.
And Wayne's got all that moon milk, all that sort of crystally drips from the...
Yeah, I know when we were on that trip, there was this guy that was just obsessed with the gypsum, the glittering walls. He's like, oh, look at all that gypsum.
Do you remember who that was? Do you remember the name of the guy?
Andrew, I think. Wasn't that Andrew?
Andrew Coyle?
Sounds familiar.
Okay, maybe. Yeah. He likes that cave. He's been through there a few times on some long trips.
Yeah.
When would you say you were hooked? When did it become more serious, you know, rather than just, here's a fun thing I do every once in a while. When did it become kind of a commitment?
I think it was this time last year, me and Aaron went down to the Central Indiana Grotto meeting by ourselves and sort of got into it that way, just networking on our own and sort of branching off.
Yeah, it's really liberating because we were only, what, like 16 when we did that first meeting?
I remember so when you guys came to that meeting.
Yeah, it's almost like being adults on our own. It's like we're around all these older guys. We're the youngest guys there, so it's almost like we're just sort of branching out and doing our own thing.
Here's all these guys who are serious enough to come to a meeting on a Wednesday night, you know, in cold weather and talk about caving.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of cool to know that they're to kind of go to that first meeting and know that there are people who are as serious about it as you think you might be.
Yeah, and it's a great community. I've never met anyone that's been mean to me or had a negative experience. Like, they're all great people. Like, even when I went, wanted to go on that Buddha trip, Paul just gave me some vertical gear, just let me borrow it. I mean, I know that stuff is expensive, so that's really cool that people just branch out like that and let you borrow stuff.
Yeah, Paul Uglum is a great resource for beginner cavers. He just, I mean, he was my guy when I first got started. He took me on my first trip. He's taken so many people and introduced them to caving and had a really positive outcome. So it's really cool when you got people like that and other guys who will just talk to you, guys like Ron Adams and Greg McNamara and Dean Wise, but really all of the leadership in the CIG, they'll just talk to you. You know, they're all about, especially seeing young guys. Like when you guys came in, I remember going to the meeting after the meeting at the bar, which you guys couldn't come to.
Unfortunately.
You still can't, not for another few years. I remember going after that meeting and this guy's like, yeah, a couple young guys showed up. Right on. And so that excites us, you know, when we see somebody who's got so many more years ahead of them who are serious enough to come to a meeting.
I think I'd really like to branch out, not just in Indiana, throughout Indiana, but also more south. I think there's some more beautiful caves, bigger caves, and also across overseas. I've heard Europe has some really beautiful caves.
Yeah, so that's another question. Have you gone caving anywhere but in Indiana?
Not yet, unfortunately.
Well, good thing is we got plenty of caves here.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some great stuff down in Kentucky, and of course, Tag, if you get into the vertical stuff, yeah, you'll have some fun. You got some fun ahead of you with that. Why do you love caving?
I just like escaping from reality and seeing that whole other world. It's like you're always above the ground. It's bright. It's all this crazy traffic and just this insane world where you're always rushing around. And just once you crawl underground, it's just completely dark and it's completely different. It's just all rocks. There's no plants. And it's just exploring.
It's unlike anything you can see above ground.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
It's a whole nother world that you can get to fairly easily and fairly cheap, too. If you're first getting into it, you don't have to go out and get all the fancy stuff.
Yeah, I've seen people just go with bike helmets with lights duct taped to the
top.
You
as long
might
as you get the bare minimum.
But being able to see something that most people don't get the opportunity to, just something fun to do and a cool story to tell afterwards.
Yeah, the cool story.
Is there anyone in your life that thinks it's weird that you go caving?
Everyone. They're just like, why would you do that voluntarily? Like, I'll tell them about how I'm crawling through water in these tight little passages, like chest high. They're like, you are crazy. I'm like, oh, I know.
There's a lot of claustrophobic people. I don't quite understand it, but I accept it, you know.
Yeah.
Have you ever had anybody freak out on you in a cave?
Not freak out while we were in there, but like telling parents afterwards sort of what we had to go through, they freaked out a little bit.
People who would never find themselves in a cave for any reason.
We've had people that we had to leave behind.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not quite leave behind, but
I mean, we came back for
eventually.
Of course.
Hopefully more cool stories to come. I know I've only been on 3 trips within the past year, so a lot of my older trips are kind of foggy in my mind, so I don't remember a lot.
Yeah.
But hopefully I'll have more cool stories in the future.
Yeah. All right. Well, Hunter Crouch and Aaron Cook, thanks so much for being on the Caving Podcast, guys.
Thanks for having us.
And good luck.
Thank you so much.
There you have it. The excitement of youth. They got the whole world in front of them, and they're already great cavers, eager to make their mark. Good guys. Great talking to them. Well, thanks again for listening. New episodes at the first of every month. If you or anyone you know would like to be a guest on this podcast, let me know. I'm trying to bank up some good interviews in the next few months so I can consistently put out new episodes even when my life is thrown into turmoil of new fatherhood this coming May. So if you got some good cave stories or you know somebody who spent a lot of time underground, I want to talk to you. Email me at alpineproductions@gmail.com. alpineproductions@gmail.com. Don't forget to support the show by supporting our sponsor, Swaygo. Visit swaygogear.com, swaygogear.com, and see if they've got anything that you need. Until next month, kill nothing but time.